Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies, drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. Let's get into it.
Oh, yeah. And we're back from outer space. Here in your face.
All right, everybody, welcome back to RPG from Scratch. This is Design Episode 47. It has been 2-3 months since we last recorded a design episode. Yeah, it's the world is on fire.
Also, what number did you say this was?
47.
That's a big number.
Yeah,
I'm not okay with that number.
We're approaching the big 50.
I can't wait. 22 episodes, we're gonna have a party.
69.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
It took me a second because I was like, "Are you trolling about the number 50 or where are we going?" No, I like that plan too. But we should do something for our 50th design episode.
Yes, you know what that thing should be?
I do not.
Hats, festive hats.
I like
that
idea. We can. Do we have a friend who makes hats?
No, but I'll find one.
Yes, we do. Well, we have a friend who can put designs on hats.
Yeah. What about I have a friend who's a taxidermist.
Ooh, that'd make good hats.
Yeah, that'd be very good hats.
What if we have to catch our own hat?
Oh, I do like that idea.
It's a challenge. Bring it to the taxidermist. Whoever has the most unique hat at the end of the month wins.
We can make our own fascinators.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
I'm going to the zoo.
So
I'm going to the orphanage.
We got to address the elephant in the room. Like, we're recording this. It's June 13th.
I have no idea. I've lost all concept of time.
It's June 13th. America is in enormous turmoil. COVID-19 is still going on. The three of us have practiced enough social distancing and have been reasonably safe that we can actually do this in the same room, which eliminates the enormous and frustrating technical difficulties we were having. We wanted to run an isolation campaign where we're going to do it remotely and stream it over Twitch on Tabletop Simulator, and that sounded like a great idea until we tried to execute it both online during during the pandemic and offline just for testing. One small technical hookup on anyone's end, the whole thing just falls into disarray. So what we're going to try to do instead is do it in person, just the three of us situated in the Casa de, what would we call this? Here in the Lion's Den.
It's the Forge. This is the Forge.
The Forge.
Here at the Forge.
The Homebrew Hotel.
So
you can't ever leave.
So we're going to keep you guys updated on that because I know a lot of people were looking forward to it, ourselves included, and we'll try to get that off the ground ASAP. But that being said, how's everybody doing now?
Doing okay. I'm not sunburned anymore, so that's nice.
Yeah, doing great.
Well, that's good. How have you guys been faring during the isolation and quarantine?
Like two pseudo breakdowns, there were definitely two nights where I'm like, it's 3:30 in the morning, I can't sleep, I'm gonna give myself a haircut just to change the thing that I look at in the mirror to feel like things are happening.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Max?
Just got fat and watched movies, basically.
I lost weight.
I have not.
I've been fluctuating dramatically. Like, I'll get motivated and unmotivated. Mm-hmm. But I feel the breakdown part. I went into probably a 2-month long depression that I was like actively doing everything to fight my way out of.
I've been
it was really tough.
Justifying DoorDash by tipping well.
Fair.
You know?
Yeah.
I've been cooking at home a lot. Yeah. Drawing, having a good time. Getting drunk on Twitch every Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
I've been enjoying that.
Popping tops. I really enjoy. Should we share that with the listeners?
What?
Is Adam going to be doing Papa Tops for a while?
Yeah, the plan is to continue doing that, and he wants to, rather than his Twitch channel just being him streaming video games and popping tops, he wants to have 4 or 5 nights a week, have a different show hosted by a different person.
Oh, wow.
So tonight, which listeners, you won't be able to, it won't be out before then, but local skaters like 10 years ago made a skate video called Playback, and him and Tony are going to stream it and do audio commentary on it tonight, and that's going to be Saturday Night Skating.
I like that
plan, and there'll be Thursday as Poppin' Tops, and then I ended up pitching him like 7 ideas, none of them which include me, but just things that people could do. I had a whole thing.
I've been talking with him about running Family Feud.
So if you guys want to check out Liam and some of our local friends, the premise behind Poppin' Tops is that Adam has never drank. He was not a drinker at all. And now people are recommending drinks for him on Twitch that he's trying and rating while getting hilariously drunk with his friends while playing trivia games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny. And he's a graphic designer, and he makes all kind of new interactive interfaces for how to rate different alcoholic beverages. And it's a good time.
Man, every time I see him, it's, look what I figured out how to do on OBS. Or look at this new program I have that interfaces with this thing. Or like, oh, I got it. He got a command station that's just a series of buttons that he can do with presets. And he's like, look what I can do. Look what I can do. And I'm like, when he gets into a thing, he goes whole hog. He doesn't know how to stop. Oh, and there's also, I don't
remember. Bad Apple GG, right?
Yep. So it's twitch.tv/badapplegg. Yeah. That's all one word.
And there's going to be a Jump Ramp discography set.
Nice.
Soon.
Jump Ramp, by the way, being the band that Liam is in.
Yes.
One of the bands.
The other ones are secret.
So during this time, Liam has been running a not recorded remote campaign that's just started with some local friends, bunch of which who've never played before.
And some of which aren't even local.
That's true, yeah. So I'm really stoked to hear, because I'm not involved in any way in this, other than like every once in a while, I'll get messaged rules questions about how things interact. So I'm really interested in hearing about it. Like, what are people doing? What are people playing?
We have a poor scoundrel, step one marksman, who's a mechanic, uses a crossbow.
What race?
Gelt.
Oh, nice.
Super fun. Called Little Cece, and the voice is just, what's her name from My Cousin Vinny?
Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei from My Cousin, like, just straight. It's so much fun. I think we have a straight champion.
And the gelt resembles a red panda, right?
Yes.
That was the idea? Okay.
We have a core ice, because he wanted the armor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think maybe step one champ, just damage dealer, tough guy, Rod. Then we have a guff, core radiance, step one ice, Sawbones, who's like a shitty doctor.
Oh, nice.
And it's awesome. Started doing some stuff and saying some stuff, and I was like, you're stepping on Kelton's toes. Back off a little. and he's got like a New York accent. And then we have a Southern Bell zealotry champion who did helmet splitter and nearly did max damage. And everyone was like, whoa, what the hell? And I'm like, it's what it's there for.
Yeah, it's what champion does. And that's, it was with a dagger, right?
Yes.
Which is, I'm so glad. That's, she messaged me about like, oh, I did helmet splitter and did like 27 damage. And I was like, with a dagger? And she's like, yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's
maybe 7-8 inches of steel just cutting right through a helmet.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's actually, it makes me glad we switched to the dice tier system, because otherwise that never could have happened.
Yeah. And people seem to be getting the dice tier system pretty well. Combat started to get flowy afterwards. I mean, the hardest part was not being sitting down to get the flow of like how things were going. But I think my favorite thing so far is the first session, we played for 2 hours, no combat, and people were just exploring.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on? The world building. There's so much that we still have to do. They were just pitching stuff. The concept of Brookies messed with Kyle's head real bad. Because like,
dogs with hooves?
Like, he's like, do they have hooves? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I don't like that.
So how do you feel, one of the concerns that it kind of floats around while we are building this, but interacted with it more recently, the character building process, like in asking people to make the characters, how much do you feel that things like profession, talents, and the races and their openness, like how much do you feel like that contributes or hinders towards making it easy to build a character?
Ooh, I don't think anyone, I didn't notice anyone deliberating, having too much a problem with that, other than Maze. And he was having trouble kind of figuring out what profession he should be to kind of go with the character. Mm-hmm. And then he literally just asked me, well, this is kind of the thing I'm going for, but I don't know the name for it. It was like, you're talking about a fixer. You're a criminal a mob fixer.
Like Winston Wolfe.
Yeah. And then I said that and he was like, oh, Google it. It works.
And do you feel like now that they all have their professions and they kind of know their characters, when they want to do skill checks, how quickly are they advocating for the skill check being part of the profession?
Like instantly.
Oh, yeah?
It happened so quickly. Like one of the first things that happens is they meet two guys in the back of the Hornets pair, which is a play on Applebee's. And as soon as they figured that out, they were like, grown, but they immediately saw the contract, realized it was too long to physically read in a day on purpose, and just skimmed it, used skill checks, and advocated for having certain expertise in it based on what their profession could do. Mm-hmm. And they did a really good job, and no one grumbled when I said, ah, it's a stretch.
Yeah.
No, like they were like, I was reaching, seeing what I could steal.
Yeah.
Things I still notice about the system that I love, momentum is such a good way to train your players how to work together and to celebrate other people's successes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a lot of positions where someone was like, come on, that's worthy of, like, that's momentum, baby. And I was like, oh no, you're right. I was missing it.
Like, yeah, when players start advocating other players getting momentum, you know that they understand the concept perfectly. Like they're very much like, hey, come on, that does it. You're right.
And it doesn't feel adversarial. It's not. No. It's not that this is momentum I'm missing out on. It's they deserve it.
That's one of the frustrating things. One of the things that's been, I haven't been frustrated by it, but I've been worried about frustrations in it. I play Pathfinder, and we're playing a pre-made campaign that was built for 4 to 5 people.
Yeah.
We're playing it with 3. And as a result, all the experience is accelerated.
Massive.
It's huge, like it, because it's being split 3 ways instead of 4 or 5. And that bothers me because if somebody was like, hey, do you want to add another person to the group? I got to be like, oh, it's going to slow down our leveling up. And that's a dumb thing to think about.
Yeah.
Like, why would that? You never. If you're a 3-person mercenary group and you're good at something and you need to add an extra person, you don't learn less.
Yeah.
You know, like the next time you do something. So, I'm glad that the concept of momentum is so easily adopted by everybody at the group, and everybody knows how it works and when and why.
And it frames the game differently than other tabletop games. And it, one, because you can essentially earn experience through talking to people and having fun interactions and being silly and being clever, because it rewards that kind of play. They sat at a table and had a discussion over a legal document for 1.5 hours, and everyone had fun because it was just stupid jokes, asides, tangents, working through stuff, figuring out what was actually going on. Trying to notice things, it became the first chapter in a book, not a race to the first fight.
Right.
And that was really good. And then when they even entered the first fight, they were like, ooh, do we have to fight? Can we be diplomatic about it? Because they understand the concept of there's multiple ways to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get around it without having to get punched in the face, that sounds just as good. I'm trying to think of things that have been difficulties or hiccups. One is one of the new players just has a hard time knowing where their lane is, not even in combat, but in how the group works socially and how character works. But that's just him being a new player.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of just, again, holes in world building that we've kind of had to fill in. That was like a minor difficulty. But everyone understood the races really well. The amount of things you could do with the path system, like Maze gave me like 7 possible characters. And he's like, wow, which one seems like more fun? And I was like, he's like, are any of these bad? Like, do you think some of these won't work? And I was like, I don't know about this one, just because this thing does 2 things sort of okay. And maybe you should do 1 thing well. And then he gave me another. He's like, this one does 2 things really well. really well. Do this one. This is the one.
Yeah, I've more encountered people being excited about the wacky combo.
Yeah.
Without worrying about it gimping their character, which is...
I've had more fun with Take the Shot than...
Oh, yeah.
Most other things in combat.
Take the Shot is so much fun. Command's my favorite.
Oh, he's Ice Citadel. No, I just remembered. He's core Ice Step 1 Citadel. Mm. And he was like, he picked it after getting through Wing Mob, Agnes's Ashes. And he was like, how much of, like, he listened to it and he's like, how much of a pain was Doug? And I was like, so much of a pain. Oh, and he was like, I want to be worse.
Yeah.
And he is.
Core Ice is brutal.
Like, he slowed a bunch of dudes. Warding striked a bunch of dudes and just sat there. He barely did any damage, got hit constantly, didn't care, and just sat there. He's like, ah, whatever.
That's awesome.
And he loved every minute of it because he knew that every time something took a swing at him and missed or took a swing at him and set a big number, that it was less for him. And every moment he enjoyed it. Also, he was constantly invigorated.
Oh, yeah.
So... that was the thing. Kyle didn't know how to use the Kamehameha.
Oh.
He didn't mechanically figure out how to use it. Because then he did it, and then I told him how it works, and he was like, ah, I should have saved that.
Yeah, that was the thing that put Fricks over the top for me. As being just... He's annoying, but if he lands just even the slightest hit, like mid-combat when everybody's been fucked
Boom.
Up, yeah, that guy's dying. Which is, it in many ways, you could say, how do I balance around that? And you're like, don't. It's cool for the healer to have those moments.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool.
And it's also a situation where it's doubtful you'd have four or five people go like, well, we're all going to be healed. Because there's too many options, too many ways to have fun. And there is something to be said about the unrelenting consistency of a champion.
Yes. Holy shit. Champion with double strike.
Yeah. Just sitting back having fun. And you're like... What are you going to do? Is like, I'm invigorated, so I only have to wait till I do enough damage for everyone to suddenly fall down because of a lightning strike.
And we need to shave 5 or 6 off every damage you take.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. And I thought that would be like the more armor is something that as we talk about items and progression, it's going to have to increase.
Yeah.
But it's got to increase slower than everything else. Because holy shit. It's funny because I was like, is it overpowered? Well, yes, in that wearing plate mail in reality is overpowered if you're up against a bunch of people in loincloths. Like, you're going to destroy them. So,
it doesn't feel so bad because, again, it doesn't scale the same way. You do have to make sacrifices for using it.
Mm-hmm.
And you exist for a pretty specific purpose at that time. And it's for certain people, it doesn't feel as rewarding. But for other people, they're like, oh, I am nigh invulnerable. And I'm like, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
You're close to being...
Like, you're an F-150. Like, you can go to the grocery store. You're not an F-1050, like, taking up 6 tiles. You know, you're still able to do whatever you want.
Yeah. You're the idea that there is a certain satisfaction when the GM is like, all right, there's a demon with a giant two-handed axe. Yeah. He stands 40 stories tall. And you're like, all right, and he's swinging his axe down. You're like, that's for me. I'll take that one. I can handle that one. That's very satisfying.
If you're Tectonia too, also remove half of that.
Yeah, once per encounter. Okay, so that's awesome. I'm so stoked to hear more about this as it progresses and people get into it. I want to talk about the thing that is still most nebulous to me. Which will stay nebulous until we codify the specific rules around it, or
it's
rituals.
The cosmos, I got it.
Yeah, there's a lot of nebulous in the cosmos. Is the rituals.
Mm-hmm.
We threw around different ideas of like how many rituals a group should get. It should scale with the amount of players or scale up if they have fewer players. I'm starting to think that that's not true because I think rituals, no matter what, are as powerful. No matter
in
how
any
many people,
situation. Yeah.
So maybe we could say you pick 3 first level rituals, or maybe 2 first level, 1 second level, although we need to figure out how many levels there are.
Yeah, well, and also, should it be limited to scribe and intellectual professions? Or I guess not, because even rangers could learn basic nature rituals and have that not be weird.
Yeah, and really, what we've found is that people kind of want to pick the things that go with their characters.
Already, yeah.
Yeah, they like getting into that. So Well, let's just say three for now. Like, every group gets three because it's just as powerful for seven people to have three rituals as it is for three people.
And who knows them is also not important.
No, it's not. If one of you knows it, effectively all of you know it for the purposes of the game. But you'll role play out how it gets done.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, what about in-combat rituals?
Okay.
Like, if you start, like, think of Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Remember the end scene in Beetlejuice where they're all trying to say his name?
Yes.
And if just one person gets off the third one, they send him back. You know, it's stuff like that where they're actively engaged in a confrontation and all three of them are participating in a ritual trying mm-hmm. to get it off and it's difficult. Something like that could be a lot of fun, I think, because it doesn't, like, you don't have to make it centered around one person performing anything. And if you're in combat, a slight change, just a very, very slight change to something can have a huge impact. Like, if you just give one person the ability to walk on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one person. Your whole group could be working towards making that happen, and that's a big deal, because if you have four players and you're in a cathedral and people are behind barricades and three of you are doing a ritual mid-combat to trying to make it so your marksman can walk up the wall, that is going to have a dramatic, overwhelmingly oppressive impact on combat. So,
and be flavorful as hell.
It's so good. So let's start there. That's when I was just spitballing, walking on walls.
That sounds fun.
What would be a... Let's use that as a template then.
Yeah.
All right.
How many actions would it take for you to pull that off?
Would it be your whole...
I think it has to be three individual combat actions.
Well, let's think about it in terms of if one person... Let's say any of these could be done by one mm-hmm. person, but anybody can take a portion of it and use it, right? Mm-hmm. So what if it's a full turn, right? So you've got swift action, move action, combat action.
Okay.
Gotta be, yeah.
And you can split it up?
You can split it up. So maybe wall walking's a little too powerful for that.
Yeah.
So what's a small thing like that? Maybe give somebody dark vision for one round, or...
Well, I think rituals also should be able to be maintained.
Yes.
That should always be part of it.
Ooh, it would suck if you didn't maintain the wall walking ritual.
Yeah, if you get knocked unconscious. Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is, you only need one person in your group to do one thing once a turn mm-hmm. to get it going.
So marksman could maintain it once it's begun.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
But if they need to do an extra thing and be like, you got to do whatever prayer, say whatever, like mm-hmm. keep the chant going while it's happening. You can switch off, and if someone has to do something, but you could always run the risk of not being able to do it.
I'm just seeing the branching out from here of like automated rituals, you know, tinkering, all kinds of things.
Well, then let's think of it. Let's think of it by the number of full turns.
Okay.
So that'd be the scale of difficulty for the ritual, right?
Yeah.
You can break up the full turn. Anybody can take any portion. Mm-hmm. Let's say if something costs two full turns worth of actions, you can split that up however you want until it's complete. And people will be like, okay, well, I didn't use my swift action, so I'll take one of the swifts right now.
I'm not going to move. Like, I have no reason to move
exactly,
this turn.
So I'll take the move action. And that is fun. I think that could be a very fun way to up the complexity while keeping everybody on the same page. It's very flavorful, a lot of role play.
And it reinforces something that we're trying to already put in gameplay that I think we're already succeeding at, which is cooperation, party cohesion, and, mm-hmm. and unity. And the idea that you're not a bunch of just, unless you are a bunch of pirates, but you're not just a bunch of pirates who are there together for no reason, that you are there to accomplish goals, perform tasks, and exist inside of a narrative as not a single entity, but at least a cohesive unit.
Mm-hmm. And there should be roles associated with this, like dice rolls.
I mean.
So maybe we leave it so that the dice rolls only happen on combat actions. Right.
Okay.
I like that.
So there's something you have to do to use the other two actions, but then like you'll be like, I'll do the move action, I'll say the chant, and then our sorcerer is going to do that composition, the composure check.
Yeah.
On its turn, you know.
Or the ritual casting check.
Exactly.
If that's part of their.
And the nice thing, and the interesting thing now is that if we make it this way, somebody can just be a wizard outside of the paths that they have. They can pick rituals and they can spend their turns casting these rituals without anyone else's help.
Being whatever path.
Exactly.
Just thinking Citadel, standing there doing rituals. You can't stop me.
Yeah.
Like,
try to interrupt
me. I'm going to keep doing this.
And difficulty should be... Well, you know what? How about just you're doing these in combat. The risk should be the actions that you lose, right?
Well, that's definitely part of it, yeah.
Right. So do we increase the difficulty based on the combat? I don't know. Maybe we'll keep the rituals small enough. And they shouldn't do damage. It should never be a damage thing. So that way we don't have to worry about
them. The boons, banes, and movement changing things is good.
So let's just use wall walking then as a example. I think that can be so powerful. What if that takes two full turns?
I'm saying three, baby.
Three.
I'm saying three.
For wall walking, three?
I'm saying three. I'm saying it should take a significant amount of the people in your party to do it in a single turn. It should be more than half. If you're running a four-person group, three people just need to sit there and go, okay.
Well, I'm thinking three's a lot.
I'm just thinking that kind of hits the scaling of when we get something big. Then is it going to take 10 turns?
Yeah.
Is it going to take...
I think two sounds good. Because remember, we have a difficulty on finding them, too.
Uh-huh.
So, and the number of combats where you're going to be able to use it are actually pretty limited.
True.
If you're going to use it in combat, you're going to use it other places, it's great. So, I don't know. So let's say you got a three-person party.
All right.
If it's two turns, it might take two full rounds to pull off.
Yeah.
And that's a long time in combat. Like,
yeah.
two rounds of combat is a lot of shit has happened. Everybody has to maintain the parity. Like if it goes around without a portion of it being
it restarts.
It resets, yeah. So I don't know. I'm thinking two only because like if we go three, a three person party will never use it.
Ever, yeah.
Never okay. ever. But there are things where we could say like, okay, well it takes 11 swift actions. You know, you can be like, that could be a fun thing. Somebody's like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do three. That's my turn. I'm doing three of them.
Yeah.
Oh.
So maybe we'll break them down like that. The number of swift actions, the number of move actions. And then we can write what those actions actually are. You know, these things need to happen.
And I think the thing that should determine whatever the tier, the level, should be the amount of combat, like the amount of attack actions that are replaced is going to be a good way to really code it. Like,
yeah.
'Cause 11 swift actions is not the same as one attack action.
It's true. But three shuts down. Like, so if everybody's like, okay, each of us is taking a swift action, you will never cast that spell. Somebody's got to sacrifice their combat actions, you know.
Should it be like the way to range it? Be like, okay, well, this takes combat actions.
Yeah, no, I do think that that's a good way to do it. Like to say, well, so two full turns is a swift action, a move action, a combat action, right?
Yeah.
And then double it. So we would say, okay, to do this ritual, it takes two swift actions. Somebody must do this and somebody must do this. It takes two move actions. Somebody must perform this motion and then somebody must perform this motion. And then two attack actions. Somebody has to say the words, invoke, do whatever, throw a thing on the ground and spit, you know?
Yeah.
just things like that.
Also, I think it'd be fun where some rituals can be done in any order. Some rituals have to be done in a very specific order.
Yeah. I think the swift action ones have to be in specific order.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and with the hardest ones end with a combat action, you know, like they have to be. So I don't think wall walking is something that needs to be done in a specific order.
No. You do a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is gifted that.
I was just thinking 11 swift actions and then you kill an enemy. And that death unleashes the...
That could be cool. And maybe an enemy will have had to have died in this time. So then, like, you get somebody almost near death and you're dragging them around for the rest of the ritual. Which sounds ridiculous, but you would totally do that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to pull off a crazy death ritual.
Like, I have this ritual, but it needs one full person of blood.
So... We got a whole one right here.
He's like, yeah, and we want it to keep, and I don't want to drain him.
Yeah.
It's very Aztec.
Well, to me, it actually sounds like just what they used to do on Navy ships. They're like, oh, we'll just bring cows and some hay. Why? He's like, beef on the move, baby.
Beef on the move is my prog rock band.
Beef on the move is what's tattooed on my taint.
Galapagos sea turtles have 1 gallon of fresh water inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Also a good thing for boats.
Okay, I like that. So let's say wall walking, how long does it last? I think two rounds?
It's got to be worth it.
I think one round, and it requires a maintenance of a swift action.
See, I was going to say move.
Ooh, okay. That's good.
I was going to say move, because like you can either move and do the move action to maintain it. Somebody else can do the move action for you to maintain it, you know, and it'll last until their next turn.
Because you're basically, at that point, you're getting one shot on the wall. And are you then climbing 30 feet up the wall in your move action? I guess that's not so bad.
How about you have to be within sight of the person maintaining it?
I like that too.
Because then you could do it yourself, but somebody can maintain it for you as long as they're willing to spend their move action to do so.
I like to think you walk 30 feet up the wall, you shoot, and the next person misses in their concentration. And then you just follow those 30 feet back down the wall.
And so the move action is like a chant and like a stomp or something. And then that way your character will have heard them maintain it, so you don't have to do it.
Okay. And like a lot of magic works in the way that we say it. It won't suddenly run out with you not knowing. You will know. And even before the physical action happens,
right,
you're aware that it is waning.
Well, I think you'd probably feel gravity catching up to you a little bit. Like, it just... there we go. Okay, I got it back.
Did we just make barbershop quartets really powerful in
our world? We just invented a way to make bards be a thing without them having to be a thing.
It's true.
Which... I'm actually happy about.
Yeah, it's been my goal this whole time.
I am very much into the idea of providing certain buffs just because your whole party is chanting something and being terrifying.
Mm-hmm. So let's think of what's another... I would say that's a level one ritual.
Okay.
Right, but it's rare.
Yeah.
Could you expand the effects of like the marsh or the kind of thing where you put a zone of... deny a zone of decay or whatever.
Huh. That's an interesting idea. Like it's something local to the area. So like if you're on a marble floor, it feels like you're walking through rubble. If you're in a marsh, the vines are tripping you up.
If you're in the desert, the sand is sticking to you in a weird way that you don't like.
And it's not, maybe it's illusory. It's not real. But it has the same effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like something that would only take one full turn.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it only lasts for one round. If you want to do it again, you got to spend your whole turn again to do it. I like that.
I like that too.
What would we call that? Just like Quagfoot?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Caltrop cantrip.
Tanglefoot?
Tanglefoot.
Tanglefoot's good.
Works for me.
We change it later if we don't like it. Now, maybe if two people cast it, the area gets bigger.
Yeah.
Something like that. So we could just say it's a burst 3. Radius 3
per caster.
Maybe you add an extra, if you add an extra 1.
Yes, that's enormous. A lot.
So we'll say it increases by 1 if you have somebody else spend just an attack action to augment it.
Yeah.
Now,
battle chant, baby, we need a battle chant.
Yeah, what would a battle chant do though? Like, what's the effect?
I don't want to add to damage. I don't want to add to hit.
Reduces dodge or armor.
No, I think this should be a bolstering effect.
Oh, I thought this was a negative effect against your enemy.
No.
Okay.
No. This is, you are going to battle. You're all singing together. So this is haka. This is keeping your, this is getting you pumped.
Okay.
This is your pump up jam, or even just like a quick march. Like you can sing a song together. It makes you move faster because you're just. Don't feel as tired.
Well, then let's have it do both. Let's have it increase movement speed by 1.
Okay.
That might be enough. That's really powerful.
That's already good.
Yeah.
Let's...
What was your second idea, though?
The second idea was your first successful hit does... It increases the dice tier by 1.
Ooh.
I think those should be two separate things.
Well, I just...
They're both very good.
Right, but they're both very good... But the movement speed thing, you can keep going.
Yeah.
And because it calls out your first hit, you can't keep that going.
Yeah.
It's only the first one. So a battle chant takes a while to get into the mood, right? But I think it only takes swift actions.
Yes.
So we could say it takes, what's 3 turns of swift actions? 9?
Okay.
9 swift actions. But everybody's got to be into it. You know,
Well, 9 swift actions and to gain the boon.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have at least spent 1
in that time. You have to be spending.
You have to be involved in the chant.
So that's your first hit after it's been cast.
Yeah, after those 9 have been spent, everybody needs to maintain it to keep that movement speed bonus up. Yeah. And you need to be maintaining the battle chant as you do your first strike. But once everybody's gotten it and you're like, all right, we're already in the shit. We don't need more movement speed. You don't have to maintain it anymore. That's cool. And it's loud. You're not going to, like, it has to be loud enough to be heard.
You can't be like, sneaking and going faster through. But it, and the whole thing is that also has a really fun out of combat use already, just for we move 1/6 faster on roads and
Only on foot though.
Yeah,
like you
does
you,
not work if on, you're on horseback
on Brookies. It's not gonna do anything. It's just gonna scare the Brookies. Don't spook the Brookies.
I'm just I like that, but I'm just thinking
spook
about Bards.
The Brookies is my prog rock band.
Just Bards now, like.
Yep.
If there's a way you could figure out a machine to do part of the ritual for you, you know, tech wizards.
That is so McGargle.
Yeah.
You show up and you like pull the ripcord and.
That's my spoke book.
No. I just imagine. Through the toilet. I imagine him with an organ grinder and like loudspeakers going like, I figured out a thing.
This plays the trooper. okay.
Like Mars Attacks, where the heads are just
Country music was the way to defeat the aliens.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But I kind of want to talk for a second about Doomsday Preppers.
Okay.
On the recorder?
Sure.
Because I'll talk about that all day.
Yeah. So I get a little
frustrated.
I don't know. I would say confused.
Okay.
About these Doomsday Preppers who spend all their time learning all these bushcraft skills or buying and stockpiling a lot of weapons, and they're out of shape and they wouldn't be able to walk up a hill, you know, like with gear on.
Like the militias where you see a bulletproof vest being stretched
to
its very limits by some guy.
Yeah, you wing somebody. Yeah, that's funny. I remember somebody posted this study about how fat people are more likely to survive a gunshot wound. And it's like, well, yeah, but they're also more likely to be hit.
Yeah.
So they're more likely to catch a bullet in somewhere that's not vital, whereas it would have missed somebody else.
You're also way more likely to die of like 90 other things.
Oh, yeah. So. And also the things that mostly kill people now.
And also for patrons, if this is on the cutting room floor, we're fat. We're not saying them or us. Like this is.
I will say like on the edge of fat though. Like we're not.
I'm clinically obese. You know.
I definitely skated into it in this past 4 months.
Yeah, it's.
I lost weight.
That's you're looking good actually. Mm. I have just been. Hanging out.
I got to control what I ate more than when I, you know, was busy all of the time. And now I'm back on it, and I hate it. I'm eating garbage again.
But I was thinking, if Doomsday happens,
yes.
For most Doomsday scenarios, people are just talking about the American government failing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, at least in America. Mm-hmm. But like, in our system, we've got real Doomsday scenarios.
Yes.
Like they're layered on top of each other, and like. If you weren't killed by the comet that came in or the meteorite that hit, what does prepping for that doomsday look like? I imagine they all start to look the same. Like they all start to look very similar. You just need to learn how to forage. You have to have decent cardiovascular health.
So cardio.
Cardio for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But also community.
Yeah.
Like that is going to be the number one.
Well, that's the do you ever hear the genetic bottleneck theory?
Yeah, the 10,000 people.
Yeah, we're the 10,000 people, but it's the thing that everyone keeps bringing up is like communal burial ritual artifacts become incredibly more common immediately after it. So the people who survived weren't the meanest, toughest, biggest fuckers. It was the people who looked after people and the people who were able to organize better. Those are the people who survived.
Dies the Fire.
And yeah, dies.
That's from Sterling.
I fucking love that
book. Tides of Fire series is about an apocalypse, and all the preppers are immediately killed because they have all the supplies.
Exactly.
And everything else.
Like, everyone. You're not stockpiling supplies, is that's a dead end, yeah. Right? So you stockpile supplies. You've got 1-2 years to use them.
Figure it out.
And then you got no more supplies.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm bringing this up is I was thinking about, what was the
Spaulding,
thank you. Spaulding, the character you came up with. And if we start to see so many of these resets in our system,
mm-hmm.
then we probably start seeing something similar like to the genetic bottleneck like yeah. you're talking about. But what's the first thing that happens afterwards? The people who survive a doomsday,
mm-hmm.
how do they survive? And I think it's not through stockpiling ammunition or canning food, although that's a valuable skill if you want to have food, safe food that you can transport without refrigeration.
And giving yourself an amount of time to get good at a set of skills that you haven't done in that situation is useful.
But also, I don't think...
Like, would Tom Hanks have survived that island?
Not if he stockpiled. He had to learn how to fish.
Yeah.
You know?
He had to learn how to make rope. He had to invent someone to talk to stay centered.
Yeah.
Not sane, but centered.
He had to create a fake community to keep himself motivated.
I think community is a huge point of any survival like that.
Especially for humans, the thing that wants community and to tear it apart more than anything else.
So the concept of a go bag, I think, is short-sighted and... strangely, I think it's primarily based in fiction, right? Because, like, doomsday scenario, bad shit's happening. The first thing you do isn't go roaming around.
No.
You don't just start traveling. You could say, like, okay, all the, because of radioactive fallout, the water here is bad, so let's get out. Yeah. But you're going to be with a group, like, mm-hmm. and you're going to be trying to help each other.
Well, also, if the water is bad... The water isn't actually bad. There's particulates. Like, water itself doesn't become radioactive. The particulates do. And building a filtration system for it is easier than most people think.
Yeah, and it's also vital. If you're going to survive...
You're going to have to do that eventually anyway.
It's just... I don't know. So first of all, doomsday prepping is fun. I think that's a thing that probably gets overlooked. People are trying to pitch it as being practical, and it's not. But it is fun. Well, it's fun to imagine scenarios, and it's fun to build a bunker.
That's what I'm saying. When you were 8 years old in the woods, what did you do with your buddies?
Exactly.
You built a bunker because it was cool.
Well, and I think there's an amount of smugness you get from it, too. Like, I think it's the same reaction for people who get eco-friendly things that on the scale that we're actually doing it doesn't matter at all in the long run at all. But there's a smugness you get from, like... No, but I know the little secret that nobody else is really digging into.
And that's interesting for the Spaulding's caches, right, that you talked about. I'm trying to think of the things where this wouldn't be, like, where people who survive the apocalypse don't just fall into the same pattern of, okay, come together, figure the new stuff out, oh, all trade routes are broken, okay, so we're going to figure out new things. Like, it always will go back to community. It doesn't come down to this nomadic Mad Max ever.
Like, those people are needed to a community sometimes?
Well, also, they would probably end up existing because people would become separated from communities and then not be able to re-enter one.
Yeah. And also, like I said, nomadic, Mad Max style. Like, nomads...
Aren't that.
No, they're not. They're not solitary at all. They are a huge support network.
Yeah.
So...
But let's look at, like, the Postman.
Okay. You know?
No, man, you're famous.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite cameos in anything. Yes. He's like, hey, man, you used to be famous. Like, yeah, I used to be.
So for listeners, The Postman is a post-apocalyptic novel where Max's favorite actor, Kevin Costner.
And one of my favorite songwriters, Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, meet each other.
And Tom Petty is...
Tom Petty.
Is Tom Petty. Yeah, he's not playing a character. He just is Tom Petty, who runs a dam?
Yeah.
A dam city. He's just mayor of a dam city. It's so goofy and I love it.
I mean, I would have voted for
Tom Petty. Yeah,
he had a good platform. But
His platform was the dam.
It was like, the platform was don't die. I like that idea.
But I just mean, like, if you are separated from another community and someone comes in with news, you're going to let that person in. Like, that nomad is going to be a huge system. Like you said, we're trading and...
But it's like they're not nomads in the sense that nomads actually were. They're like Ronin almost.
Yeah.
You know, like...
It's never been a human problem to walk 1,000 miles to make a profit on something.
Right.
Like, people think...
The Proclaimers know that very well.
Yeah. But even more. 5 times.
Well, they did it for love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, just to fall down. The postman's interesting because the premise is that he was not a postman, and he just found a bag of mail. And, like, the value of that bag of mail, it made him a leader, even though...
And a legend.
Yeah, and a legend, just for no other reason than he brought one community news. And then they're like, bring more. Keep going. Let's get this going. So, but that's a perfect example of the moment this happened. Yeah, there were people who were on their own, who were murderers and stuff like that. But the people who survived and thrived were all in communities that worked together. So maybe instead of thinking a ton about the end point of the cultures that got wiped out for each era, we can think of, like, what immediate steps did these guys take
that led them to become the rising power?
Yeah, and then that will determine what artifacts made it, you know, when they got wiped out.
My favorite post-apocalypse, like, moment is, like, 400 BCE when Rome was like, we got to go back to Rome, so everyone in Britain and France, just do what you can. You know? Can you imagine having the Roman Empire and then it's just not there anymore?
No.
That is an apocalypse.
No, I can't imagine that.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, well, apocalypse hasn't happened. I'm like, it's happened a bunch of times to a lot of people.
The Bronze Age collapse was ridiculous.
The Mongols.
Oh, yeah.
They were an apocalypse. Catastrophe. The writings, Christian people who did writings thought they were literally the armies of Gog and Magog sent to wipe out all humanity, because they did. They just wiped out all humanity.
Well, they're like 5 foot tall on a horse, never getting off the horse. So you're like, is that a person or is that just...
Is that a centaur?
Yeah.
A centaur that shoots arrows out of its mouth. That's terrifying.
Yeah. You just ruined my sleep for the foreseeable future.
We got a new enemy. We've got a new monster.
You know, we got some historical points to look at if we're looking for how societies come back together after something devastating.
Yeah, think about China after that, right?
Yeah.
Constantly in China.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Trading empires get set up quickly. Former cultures that have a strong natural hierarchical situation reform faster. And anarchist hill people. And I don't mean anarchist in, like...
Yeah.
The way we think of anarchy as a political
chaos
movement.
Yeah.
But the anarchist hill people who are like, oh, we don't, what do you mean rules? And they're like, well, how do you guys do things? And be like, we just aren't mean to each other as a thing.
The mean guy dies usually.
Yeah.
We like eating food and this makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. So we just try to make enough food for everybody. And sometimes we don't, and that's bad.
So there's a book I read that was very similar to Postman and very, very good called Lucifer's Hammer, where a comet comes too close to the earth and it's chunks that break apart as it approaches the sun. A bunch of them hit the earth and everything just gets reset, basically. But again, community is the thing that saves the day almost always. And I know that's fiction, but we can't think of a single reason why that wouldn't be true.
No.
And then the mythology and everything that comes from that. What was the story about the monk after the apocalypse? Like, Catholicism just starts putting monks everywhere again. I don't know. I can't think of the name of the story. It's famous, but I've told you to read it before. We've talked about it on...
Okay. Oh, you're talking about Canticle for Leibowitz.
Yes. That story is amazing about how society puts the pieces back together.
Yeah, 3 apocalypses happen in that book, and it comes back to the same... well, very, very similar but different things, but then it gets real, real woo-woo towards the end. But it's fun. It's a fun book. All right, so... I kind of wanted to put that bat in your guys' belfry in terms of...
That be in my bonnet?
Just because it's a different framework for how we think of where these civilizations come from. Instead of what kind of artifacts do we want them to find, so what would that mean about who they were? Let's think of how did they survive, and what does that imply?
Let's just at least knock one out. I think the Savathians were very Athenian, right?
Yeah, very Grecian, I think.
But maybe in a larger context where...
I think our original concept was they were the Atlantis, basically, right? So high magic, high technology together.
But they're not laborers. They have an working underclass yeah. of primordial sentient races.
Yeah. So yeah, that's I think how they survived. First of all, they had an island.
Yeah.
Right. So whatever shut down everyone else, just gave them a pass, which allowed them to get really far ahead of everyone else.
And then rule through force.
Yeah. It's like the British Empire almost.
Yeah.
So, okay. I like that. Let's get on to step six. Give me six steps.
Definitely going to have a fun fallen trade empire that wouldn't even have to be like, I would like there to be a Bronze Age collapse of like in the recent calamities, there was a weird, even like Golden Age run where there were a bunch of really great empires and they realized like, oh, war sucks. You know what's really better? Trade. Trade is so good.
I like it.
You know what's an easy
step?
Well, I was going to say an easy way to say why the Savathians got far ahead and why they were the one that was spared the setback of everyone else is maybe there was a flood. Right?
Yeah.
And they breathe underwater. That would do it. Like it's and they would also be able to any relics that were still submerged, they could just go get.
It could even be a thing where they lived primarily underwater. There was a flood. The flood waters receded and in fact exposed their island to the surface for the first time in several thousand years, and they're like, oh, I guess we live on the land now because we already built all these buildings and we're not moving them.
Yeah. And we can breathe air.
Yeah, whatever. No big deal.
Easy peasy, man.
I really like that idea.
But it's also harder to move things above water. Yeah. So we're going to need some people to do that for us.
Oh, yeah. But hey, all those people also breathe air, which we have now.
Just the giant crab monsters and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and that's a thing. They had predators in the giant monsters under the ground. It exposes their island to the air.
They suddenly can't hang out.
It's an oasis. Yeah.
Win-win, baby.
Let's get into step six. We've got six paths we can do. We've got champion, command, marksman, radiance, scoundrel, and zealotry.
Do you want to take the hard one?
Always.
Scoundrel, hey, then. I think scoundrel is the one that's getting harder to do.
Interesting. Okay. Let's do, because they're a toolbox, right? Like, that's their,
yeah.
They've got just tricks and tricks and tricks. Let's see. Scoundrel. Okay, so let's, quick rundown. Scoundrel has venoms. They have combat tricks where they sweep the leg. They can dodge people. They can throw pocket sand and blind people. They can quick draw. They can build traps. More venoms.
Could we start putting bullfighter stuff into that?
No.
Like Matador?
Yeah, Matt, like...
That's
what Venom Strike is. Yeah. You know?
Well, I just mean, like, you got the cape, the big guy's running at you, you move, and all of a sudden your champion's behind him with a spear.
We have that, actually.
Yeah.
We call it Tag Out. And as a move action, you swap places with an adjacent ally.
I just want more Bugs Bunny to Scoundrel.
Bugs Bunny might be a great, like...
Yes.
Like a reference point.
He's a Scoundrel.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking if we're looking for a defensive thing, I would love to make an ability that is defensive for scoundrels that requires multiple opponents in your face. That in a situation where there's multiple opponents in their face, they actually have more options.
That's interesting. I don't know. I feel like we're stepping on champions' toes a little bit
there. Maybe.
Unless they're non-damaging options.
Oh, no. This would be I slam two guys together and I get out.
Maybe like... tie their shoes together, that kind of thing.
No,
I mean figuratively.
Yes, like
but that's
no. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, that's a fun thing. Maybe like some kind of bolo, a ranged attack.
I like that.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay, so they've got underhanded, where it gives them they can crit on 1, 2, and 20 with piercing, or 1 and 20 with non-piercing. On guard, you make a basic attack, and if that target makes an attack action at all, you get another attack. And smoke bomb.
How many traps do they have?
Let's see. Another trap would be great.
Another poison is an idea because we can always throw those in. And they don't even have to be really that great. Like, it's just more, like, mm-hmm. if a more options thing, that's fine.
They have a damage trap, which uh-huh. just deals damage, a snare trap, where it knocks them down, and a spell trap, mm-hmm. where you load a spell into it and do it. So I like the bolo idea. Yeah. Maybe an attack action, mm-hmm. throw bolo. It. You can immobilize somebody for
from range. Round. Yeah,
let's say five. Like it's not you can't throw it 10. You know, because you're throwing it with your hand. You're not like firing uh-huh. it out of something. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah,
I like that.
Okay, bolo.
What does it do?
Just immobilizes them. Immobilizes. One round. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Does it knock them flat? So instead of immobilizing him, it knocks
would
him flat.
Would that be a roll?
A roll.
I think it would be a roll.
Yeah. So it immobilizes him no matter what, as long mm-hmm. as it hits. And it knocks him flat, but they have to make a dexterity
check.
Dexterity
check. To stay standing.
Yeah. Well, you have to beat their dexterity defense.
Yes.
And it would obviously be a creature their size.
Yeah. Oh, so how about this? You make an attack roll, distance of 5. If that attack roll...
5 feet or 5 squares? 5 feet?
5 squares.
5 squares?
Yeah.
How about 3 squares? They're throwing it.
Yeah, but the...
Like 15 feet is a long way to throw a bolo, man.
But I think if you're getting the force... All
right.
It, yeah. The reason I think 5 is because then 3 limit... Like, you're trying to keep somebody from fleeing.
That's true.
And it just won't come up as often yeah. if it's 3. Okay, so you make an attack roll, range attack roll. If it hits, they're immobilized. If that attack roll exceeds their dexterity defense... They're knocked flat.
Done.
Yep.
That way it's just one roll and you get to...
But it is a creature their size or smaller, right?
I don't think so.
No. Can you bolo an elephant?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And in fact, that's a really great way of taking care of a creature larger than
but
you.
But I'm just wondering... No, I like that. I'm just wondering... When I think of a bolo, I think of maybe something that's a foot long.
No.
Aren't they like three or more?
Yeah.
Are they?
I think so.
I've only seen small ones.
No.
But I'm wondering...
I think you can make a bolo that's like 2.5 feet.
Yeah.
You have 3 of them. It would have... Man, I'm just saying...
I'm fine with that. I'm
the
happy.
Way you get rid of AT-ATs,
yeah,
my yep. dude, he's going for the legs.
It's I true. Just love the idea of like a cast net. You know, he's
got, oh, yeah, yeah.
So he's got it in his teeth and he's just spinning.
You know, it would be interesting. So I think the way to get around this problem is that you can just say that creatures over a certain size just can't be immobilized. Be.
Yeah.
Like you can't... You're frost spell is
and it
not
doesn't
going
work,
to stop it.
It doesn't work on snakes.
Right. Nothing without legs. How about that?
Yeah. and
anything
probably
without
like,
legs.
We haven't made an official size chart, but like large and smaller creatures, it just does it pretty well.
Yeah.
And when it gets too big, yeah, all it does is wrap around one leg and it's like, what? Like, fuck you.
If it has to have legs. If you're fighting a giant slug and you wrap the bolo around his neck, it
doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably
it's
annoying.
Not happy.
It doesn't feel good.
What if it's a snake with arms but no legs? Can you
no.
bolo the arms?
I think you would treat it as a rope.
Yeah.
Because also, if it's on their hands, they're just going to slip out of it. Whereas around the feet, they trips them up while they're running. Because if you weren't running and somebody boloed your feet, you'd just step out. You know, it wouldn't be. All right. So, okay, I like that. What do we call that? Just bolo?
Bolo, baby.
Yeah. Bolovo's revenge.
All right. So we have bolo. We've got...
Want to do a trap?
Let's do a trap. Let's give him one new trap.
Okay.
So, well, actually, before we do a trap, you already talked about the idea of if multiple people are in your mm-hmm. face, you got options. So, what's a fun... Let's say you're adjacent to 3 enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you want to do as a...
you want to escape. You're trying to slip out, mm-hmm. and you're mm-hmm. using the lack of coordination between those 3 individuals to gain a movement advantage.
How about redirecting a strike?
Ooh, I like that.
I was thinking if like you lay down a rake, then when they step on it, they get smacked in the
face.
That's
the damaging trap. We've already got that.
All right, okay, cool. Yeah.
It's just a rake.
It's sideshow bobbing.
Yeah. So let's do... I kind of like a redirection. Maybe a per scene.
I like that.
Do we treat it as a... It has to be utility, right? Because it's immediate reaction.
Yeah.
Once per scene, you can redirect a melee attack.
I will say a physical attack. I think you should be able to arrows and
okay. So how about it doesn't even have to be physical. Yeah. So any targeted attack.
I don't know about magic though.
Well, because like if an ice thing is coming,
I guess it's
like
yeah, it's still a physical
fireball.
Object.
You know.
Yeah.
So we'll say once per scene, you can attempt to make. So how you do it is you make an attack roll mm-hmm. against the incoming attack. And if it meets or exceeds what they rolled,
yeah,
then you can redirect it into an adjacent enemy. Has to be adjacent.
Yes,
because
you're not aiming that far.
Yeah, you're just trying to get the you're trying to head fake the adjacent enemy to take it for you, basically.
So it's like gun kata.
Yeah, kinda, but only once per scene.
Yeah.
All right, I like that. That's two down. We got the range bolo. We've got the redirection.
And the redirect is, I love the redirect as an offensive defensive tool.
Do we want to make it once per scene? Because I feel like you almost want to, it'd be fun to do that multiple times.
It would, but the fact that you also don't take damage makes that real good. Like the way it's set up now, what do you think the percentage chance of not having something hit you?
How about now? This is, I don't know if this is too powerful or not. I just want to say it out loud. Once per round, but you can't make opportunity attacks.
Oh, it uses up your opportunity attack slot.
Yeah. Ooh. We'll say as an opportunity action, you can do
ooh.
This.
That
I like that.
That suddenly doesn't sound too broken.
Because now we're talking step six now, scoundrel.
Yeah.
That's huge if we give it to him.
Well, it's I also like it because that adds a level of survivability if you choose to just do that.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty crazy.
So we could say, we could make it limiting by saying, because like right now opportunity attacks are, if you have a two-handed weapon, you get one. If mm-hmm. if you have a weapon in each hand, you get two. And and there are ways to get more,
yeah.
right? But we can say with this ability, if you use this, you get no more opportunity.
Your offhand doesn't do anything anymore. Yeah. yeah.
Just for that round, not yeah. for the turn. Okay.
Yeah. Just for the round. So if you use this as an opportunity action, you don't get any more until the start of your next turn.
Does that include unlimited opportunity attacks?
It includes that.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're
Citadel.
Core Citadel, six-step scoundrel, if you use this ability, you don't get any more opportunity attacks that round.
Yeah. I think that has a cost to it.
Now, that's a big upgrade.
And you can't take the shot. You can't do anything if anyone...
So granted attacks.
You can't be granted actions. You yes. can't use opportunity attacks.
Yeah.
I like that. I think you would always... Because the thing is, you would always choose to do it.
Yes.
Like you'd be like, well, I mean, it's basically an opportunity action, and I don't take damage. It beats me not doing this. So you
also,
roll against their attack.
It's also so much fun to think about a situation in which a scoundrel is holding the line.
Mm-hmm. Only really against one target, you know.
Well, no, I'm just saying, even against multiple targets, the idea of being able to ignore possibly one attack of three in a round.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty big. Like that could
it's
be
big.
A lot.
It's big.
Like it's not going to keep them up indefinitely. Like a Citadel will just sit there, but you could do a lot.
Just makes me think of like Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much.
Oh, I don't want no trouble.
What was the Mike was telling us about a meme where it says who would win in a fight, Jackie Chan or Bruce Lee? And they're like Bruce Lee. Obviously, he's fighting. He's like, hold on. Are there any ladders in the room?
I was going to say.
No, it's
in it's in a ladder factory, and they're like, oh.
Are they at a ladder factory? Is Mr. Chan holding a baby? And does he or does he not want any trouble?
Yeah.
Those are the deciding factors.
If he has a baby in a ladder factory and he doesn't want any trouble, he wins.
Game over.
Yeah.
Through plot armor.
Yeah.
I love that that's his lane, where he's just, that's Jackie Chan. Okay.
America could never figure out. They're like, all right, we're going to bring him to America and we're going to jump cut. It's like, well, no, he just
no,
show
let
him
hit.
Just show him for like 3 minutes on camera. Mm-hmm. Nah, we'll cut it up like 20 times.
Ugh. All right, so I like that. and let's just throw in a trap. I think that'd be enough, right? Because that we just call that redirect.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Citadel, if you're using a shield, you can deflect. It's similar. You can deflect, but this one's just it has to be an adjacent enemy, which rewards you for being in melee as a scoundrel, which is good.
And it deals damage. It's all that flavor.
How about if there is no adjacent enemy, it just deals no damage. Like you've dodged it essentially.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Still useful against a single target. Good.
Yeah.
Useful at range. Here's the thing, and I want this to be true. If the adjacent enemy is the one who makes the attack, I think they should be able to do it.
I don't know.
That may be too good. That's probably too good.
But also, if they're shooting a fireball at you, you're not. So I think
you're not striking. You're not
batting it back at them. Yeah. You are just pulling a different enemy into its path instead of you. You know what I mean? Or you presented a target that was going to hit one of their allies, and they went for it, and you moved out of the way, and it hit the ally. So, like Citadel,
If the idea is that they're pulling and using movement instead mm-hmm. of actually striking the target, mm-hmm. then I think it should be called Let's Dance rather than redirect, because it's not really redirecting. He's not changing the path of the attack. He's putting in the fancy footwork.
There's got to be a word for that when you make enemies target each other.
Friendly fire?
Yeah.
There's probably a fencing term for it, right?
No, because fencing's 1v1.
Yeah.
But I just mean like redirecting an attack. Well, like that.
Parry and riposte is we use that for them.
Mm-hmm.
Lure, entice, induce,
enticing lure,
inveigle.
Is that? I don't like that word.
I've never heard that.
I do not like that word.
Tempt.
Yeah.
I like tempt.
Yeah. Tempting target or something.
Yeah.
Tempting flourish.
Well.
Tempting
your. What you're doing, it's a reaction, right? So you're going to say, like, how about bait, right?
Yes.
So we could just call it bait.
Bait.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to bait them. I'm going to bait them. Yeah, okay.
Done.
We'll call it baiting. B-A-I-T-I-N-G.
Yep.
I'm going to use my baiting, and then...
And I'm going to go home, do some baiting.
Yes. All right, and now a trap.
Cut bait. So my idea for a trap, I don't know if it's plausible, the opposite of being slowed, where it would immediately force you to move your full speed in a direction.
That's fun. We had those, remember, an artifact we had where it was just a little rocket you put, or the pushing stones, stuff like that.
This would be like you step on it.
I think
and
this
all
would be like
you,
a straight up springboard.
Like you have
that's all it would be.
You have to move 8 squares in like this direction no matter what.
Oh, like a floor catapult.
I was just thinking Bugs Bunny style.
No, that's okay, let's like, straight up think Bugs
being,
Bunny.
What's the opposite of being slowed? Suddenly being launched.
Yeah. We got the anvil.
Oh no.
Grand piano.
We don't, that I was gonna say we don't have to think of Bugs Bunny. We have the perfect example. It is Wile E. motherfucking Coyote, baby.
It's true.
That is what we're going for. So yeah. I like the idea of a spring trap. That's cool.
Ooh, okay. What if you could choose the direction, right? So it can go straight up.
Yes.
Oh, it can go diagonal, but it'll move them a maximum of 8 spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spring trap.
Done.
I like the guy is running forward and all of a sudden it just gets Boop. Launched.
Yeah, you could launch it back, launch it forward. Because there's no way you're being launched and making a coordinated attack. I don't think you can do
that.
And
if you happen to land in the same space as one of your allies, then something should happen.
And it only works on objects your size or smaller. So
yeah, it's designed around your weight.
So you could essentially be like, oh shit, we can't get anything over this wall.
Blink.
I'm gonna drop this thing on my spring trap and send it up. And traps already have their own rulings and limitations, so we'll just say you get a new trap. You get the spring trap.
I just thought...
You would use the... I would abuse the hell out of this.
Oh, my God.
What if your champion was able to fling over the line of scrimmage to now be in the rear?
It's so good.
What to pull... What's the Johnny Rico move?
Oh, flip six.
Flip six? Yeah.
Something.
We could just call it the Bo Jackson. What was it? In his final game against Alabama?
He
just handed him the ball and he jumped
over
both lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be terrible. If Bo Jackson was running at you with a sword, it's like, that's a nightmare.
No, and he here's the thing. He would jump over you, and you'd be like, well, this is not, like, this isn't, he's not running from me. That's not how this is going.
Nope.
Even, like, Wilt Chamberlain with a sword.
Yeah.
Like, God damn.
LeBron James with a sword.
Yeah.
Shit, that should be our, that's my, hello, Boston.
We're LeBron James with a sword.
Yeah. That's terrifying. He is so fucking huge.
Yeah.
And jumping, like, just
and still weird, like,
like,
LeBron James is huge and still in control of his body.
Yeah. Is he currently the most impressive athlete in the world? He might be.
I don't know, because there's,
I would be way more scared of him with a sword than Hafthor Bjornsson with a sword.
Yes.
I am excited about that fight, though.
Him and Eddie Hall?
Yeah. Just two giant dudes hitting each other? I will pay to watch that.
I don't know. Like,
I don't know anything about either one of them, but
I think Eddie Hall is probably a better boxer, but Hafthor has like 50 pounds on him and a full foot of reach.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know.
And looks like he's built for stamina more.
Yeah.
I just want to watch it.
I do too.
Yeah.
Well, they used to do the sumo wrestling in
are
the
they,
World's Strongest Man.
Are they going to just fight each other with tree trunks? Is that the idea?
Oh, please. Like, who can just pick up the biggest tree trunk gets to use it?
I think Hafthor's much younger.
Yeah.
As well, right?
Yeah.
He's like,
I think
25
what,
or something.
I was going to, yeah. I think 27 now.
Oof.
Because what? I remember they said how old he was when he got on Game of Thrones the first time, but he's like one of the youngest people on set.
Yeah.
And they're like, you look like a fucking monster, though. Yeah.
All right. I think one step six is enough for today.
Also, that was a hell of a step six.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we started doing the zealotry stuff. And what was the other one where I was like, ooh, that's a big get. Like, that's a big step. I was like, oh, what are we going to do for some of these other guys? I'm like, nope, this is amazing.
Just stick with this, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's where we're going to end today. I want to thank Liam and Max for joining me.
Thank you.
You're welcome, baby.
And we will see you soon.
I need to stop saying baby. I'm saying baby too much. I've been hanging out with Tony.
Mm. Brother Tony. And baby.
He's getting in that, like, Van Halen mode.
Nice. I've never been in a Van Halen mode.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. If the game we're making sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RPGFS. $1 patrons get access to the cutting room floor, where all of the off-topic comedy that was cut out of episodes is curated for your enjoyment. $2 patrons get the updated character sheets that they can use to make their own characters in our system. $5 patrons get access to every rulebook we release as we update them. $10 patrons get to create custom NPCs for use in our actual play podcast, Leyliners. Also, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Every review helps. If you want to reach out to us with your gameplay ideas, please comment on our Patreon or tag us on Twitter. We are at @homebrewhombres. Thank you all again, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.